Hello, everyone. I'd like to call to order the Planning Commission meeting for Monday, February 24th, 2014. Let's start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, Madam Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Commissioner Dressler?
Here.
Commissioner Onan?
Here.
Commissioner Solomon?
Here.
Vice Chair Daniels?
Present.
Chair West?
Here. Okay, I don't see any speaker slips, so no public forum this evening? No? Okay. Then we'll move on to item 1A, Madam Clerk.
Item 1A are the Planning Commission minutes for, item A is the Planning Commission organization. A1 is the election of the 2013 chair and vice chair. I believe that should be 2014.
That is true. We are in 2014. So for this next year, I'd like to go ahead and nominate Commissioner Daniels for chair position and Commissioner Solomon for the vice chair position.
Second.
Any discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, passes unanimously. Congratulations. So I guess at this time I pass the gavel over
aye.
To... Did you not say aye?
You were quick.
You know, that's one thing they'll say about me. I was quick. Okay. At this point, I hand this over, correct? All right. I hand it over to Chair Daniels. Thank you.
I do, if that's appropriate.
Way to take control, Brent.
Meg. Apologize, and we're back. No, we're not.
Apologize, and we're back. Linda, if you could speak to B1, please.
Item B1 on the administrative agenda are the Planning Commission minutes for the Planning Commission meeting of January 27th, 2014.
Any discussion?
I wasn't present, so I'll abstain.
Thank you.
I'll move the minutes.
It's been moved. Second?
Second.
Vote? Yeas, nays?
Ayes.
Aye.
Aye.
Nobody left the yay? Yay? Okay, thank you. 401 with Commissioner Solomon stepping down. Well, what we're here for tonight, Linda, would you please read C1?
Thank you. Item C1 is a public hearing. It's case number 12-091DP, Samara Medical Office Building, located at 454 South Patterson Avenue, APN 065-090-013.
Thank you. Ms. Carmen, do you have any discussion before you hand it off to staff?
No, I do not.
Thank you. Lisa? Okay. Mr. Mimic?
No, I do not.
Yeah. That's three strikes. Please, go.
Thank you, Chair Daniels and members of the Planning Commission. This evening we are here for two applications, one a development plan and one associated modifications for parking spaces in the front and side yard setbacks. The applicant tonight is Samara Capital Group. Looking at the project location of the project site, it's on 454 South Patterson Avenue. It's about 900 feet directly south of the Patterson Avenue and Hollister Avenue intersection. It's a previous developed site. Surrounding land uses include the existing medical facility on the site. It's a one-story, 25,000-square-foot building. Adjacent surrounding uses include the Goleta Valley College Hospital, as well as a Cavaletto Medical Center directly north of the site. Directly east is office and maintenance buildings currently operated by Verizon. Directly south are office and light industrial uses. About 500 feet away from the project site is Maria Ignazio Creek. And to the northeast of the site, you have some condominium residences. The land use designation is office and institutional, and the zoning district is professional and institutional. Looking at some photos of the project site, this is the landscape area. You know, in the proximity of where the proposed footprint of the building will go, looking north, you can kind of see the south elevation of the Cavaletto Medical Center, as well as the condominium residence to the northeast. Looking directly south, you see the existing medical facility on site is currently operated by Pacific Diagnostics Laboratories. And looking east, you see the adjacent parcel, currently with the Verizon office space as well as the maintenance yard behind it. Looking directly west, you see the Goleta Valley College Hospital. Looking at the proposed site plan now for the development plan. The project site is 3.42 acres in size. The proposed building that they're proposing is two-story, 20,000 square feet, and they're proposing it directly north of the existing medical facility, also directly north of the proposed courtyard they're going to have between the buildings. The footprint is basically square. It does have a rounded facade elevation along the western facade. In terms of access, they are proposing a realigned driveway at the north west corner of the lot, as well as a realigned driveway along the southern property line. Currently, there is an existing driveway. It's currently just north of the existing building, and they're proposing to remove that driveway. Looking at the proposed parking, they're proposing two new parking space locations. One is the parking space location directly west of the existing building on site. And the other parking spaces are along the northern property line. These are proposed compact parking spaces. They're going to use the existing parking on site that contains roughly about 191 spaces with the existing and proposed. They're going to have 8 ADA parking spaces, as well as they're proposing 29 parking spaces with the adjoining property to the east. This will be implemented through a reciprocal parking and access agreement to the property to the east. They're also proposing new landscaping along the western portion of the property. Associated with this development plan is the proposal for two modifications to the development plan. Like I mentioned earlier, these modifications exist and are identified with the red lines on the site plan. Looking first at the modification along the corner of the western parking location and spaces, I would say roughly about 20 square feet of that parking lot in one space in particular projects into the front yard setback. So that's one proposal they're asking for a modification. The second is along the northern property line here. As you can see, these 18 compact parking spaces do encroach into the side yard setback. So that's the second modification they're requesting here tonight. The height of the building they're proposing is 35 feet. That is in conformance with the professional institutional zone district. And the uses of the proposed building will be solely medical, dental related, which is also allowed in that zone district. Taking a look at the proposed elevations, again, 35 feet in height maximum for all elevations. Your materials are mostly CMU block wall with a smooth plaster finish. Your colors are more oriented in terms of earth tones, light grays, light browns. looking at a proposed rendering from South Patterson Avenue. Shows the western elevation, the rounded facade. The DRB did conceptually review the project on December 11, 2012. Overall, they thought the project was well designed. They thought the medical building was compatible with the existing medical facility on site. They did find the proposed landscaping coordinated effectively with the existing landscaping on site. And from an aesthetic standpoint, in terms of the site design of the project, they found that the modifications were acceptable. Staff did conduct CEQA analysis on the project. We initially conducted an initial study to see if there was any potentially significant impact areas as a result of the project. During our analysis, we came up with three potential areas that could potentially have significant impact on the project. The first one was cultural resources, the second was noise, and the third was traffic and transportation. We did release the initial study in MND 30 days prior to tonight on January 24th for a comment period. That was released to the State Clearinghouse as well as local agencies, and also we notified property owners within 1,000 square feet. Just after reproduction of the staff reports, we did receive minor comments from the Air Pollution Control District, and there is in your packet here tonight an errata form explaining what they had comments regarding. Overall, minor comments in general, the analysis doesn't affect the conclusion. However, they wanted some specific language put into that staff report, mostly regarding specific thresholds that the city of Goleta has compared to APCD. Ultimately, those are the same thresholds, but they asked if we would identify those, and so we did in the errata form. I want to briefly go over each significant area. The first one, like I mentioned, is cultural resources. So the project site is approximately 500 feet away from the Maria Agnesio Creek. Staff did conduct a literature search as well as a cultural survey for the project site. Came up negative for cultural remains. However, with any waterways or creeks in the area, especially historically Chumash did settle waterways in the area, we did want to require mitigation measures. That includes mostly primarily two mitigation measures. One is providing a Class 2 and Class 3 investigation if cultural resources are found on the project site. They'll have to stop work immediately and go through those two investigations. The second mitigation measure that we're incorporating is city staff will be present in terms of at the time of grading. We'll be monitoring the site. With the implementation of these two required mitigation measures, the level of the cultural resources area will be at a level of insignificance. Briefly taking a look at the second significant area is noise. The Goleta Valley College Hospital is about 200 feet away from the project site. Hospitals are sensitive receptors in the area, so we implemented two mitigation measures that would mitigate that to a level of insignificance. One is reducing temporary construction noise by adding shielding, muffling of heavy machinery and power tools, as well as if construction equipment does increase to 65 decibels, they will have to shield that construction. Looking at the last potential significant area was traffic. The Penfield Smith did conduct a traffic study. Basically with the project site and how it relates to the existing roadway network. They did find the project to have roughly 615 average daily trips. This includes 60 p.m. peak hour trips. And through the analysis, they found that the one intersection, Patterson Avenue and the U.S. 101 southbound ramp, would exceed the level of service that was required for that intersection by adding 15 more trips to that specific intersection at the peak hour. Therefore, the Department of Public Works came up with mitigation measures to mitigate that. One is restriping of the southbound approach overpass to have two lanes going south. Second was the installation of a ramp meter on the southbound 101. With the inclusion of those mitigation measures, the traffic area can be mitigated to less than insignificant. Looking at the general plan zoning consistency, the project does conform to all applicable policies of the general plan. It's allowed use in the land use designation as well as the zoning ordinance. Looking at the development standards for the professional institutional zone district, it will meet front yard setbacks as well as side yard setbacks if the modifications are approved. We'll meet the rear yard setback, the distance between buildings, building coverage, landscaping requirements, and the parking spaces. In conclusion, the project is consistent with the Office of Institutional Land Use Designation as well as the Professional Institutional Zoning District. The project's impacts can be mitigated to less significant with the inclusion of mitigation measures. Therefore, staff is recommending tonight that the Planning Commission adopt the attached resolution and adopt the mitigated native declaration with the mitigation monitoring reporting program, as well as improve the development plan and associated modifications. With that, we do have the project team here tonight. I'll briefly introduce the people I do know. We have the lead agent, which is Dana Severi. We do have the consultant from Penfield & Smith, Derek Rapp. And we have Inaki Villarin, which is the lead architect for the project. With that, that includes staff's presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mimic. Is there any questions for staff at this point?
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Mimic, is it? Mimic. Mr. Mimic, with regard to the comments that you got from the Air Pollution Control District, did they in any way change your assessment as to the fact that the impacts would be mitigated by the mitigations that were recommended in the MND?
Yeah. No, they didn't. So they did provide conditions of approval for the project. That we have incorporated in the attachment in our conditions of approval section. However, in terms of their specific comments, they regarded, they wanted us to identify our City of Goleta thresholds. We had only identified the APCD thresholds. The City of Goleta thresholds and APCD thresholds are the same. However, they wanted to have our thresholds spelled out in the document. So we went ahead and did that in the errata form. Additionally, they wanted to have specific thresholds called out in the table in terms of the 25 pounds a day for specific emissions such as ROC and nitrous oxide, and we went ahead and did that. But no, the comments don't change any of the analysis or exceed any of the thresholds.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Quick question.
Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Mimic, could you describe to me how the noise shielding would be accomplished should the level rise to a level of significance?
Yeah. So they have a couple ways of doing that. One was in terms of actually have devices to actually muffle the noise through, from what I understand, almost similar to like a muffler on a car. But they also have actually temporary walls that they can put up in front of heavy construction equipment that mitigate that noise as well.
Chair Daniels, if I could ask a couple questions.
Please, Commissioner.
Thank you. For the historic purposes of this, the lot line adjustment, this was one lot that was created two last year. And the two lots, the other lot created is where the Verizon building is now. Is that correct?
Correct.
So then the shared parking that is in this document, is that going to be on that property? Or where is that located? And mm-hmm. Did I miss that?
Correct. So they are obligated to have 29 shared parking spaces. And those parking spaces will be in the property adjacent, so on the Verizon lot. And we'll do that through a reciprocal parking and access agreement. In terms of having, you know,
in terms of identifying those spaces, the applicant isn't required to identify them as long as 29 spaces are always available for Samara staff or clients.
So the parking that exists there today, that represents pretty much all the parking that will be there after the new project is created. I mean, there's a separate lot behind the Verizon building. That's not included in any of these parking numbers.
It is, yeah. 29 spaces are.
Behind the Verizon building?
Correct, yeah. Correct.
Okay. I think I just lost the next thing that I wanted to ask Chair Daniels, so I'll have to try and remember and come back.
Sure. I just want clarity on that point, Mr. Mimic. On the east side of the Verizon building, is that what you're talking about? Really?
It's east of the Verizon building.
It's east. Yeah, so it's closer to the creek.
Correct.
And they already exist.
Correct.
That's fine. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Commissioner.
Okay, so I have a few questions related to water, not surprisingly. Is this project using recycled water? And if not, where is the closest recycled water connection point to this location?
That's a good question. I'll ask the applicant to speak on that one.
Yeah.
Mr. Rapp, you don't know where the closest reclaimed water line for GWD is? Okay. Well, it does run to UCSB, and it runs quite close to, it is close to the intersection of Hollister and Los Carneros. Does anyone here know where the GWD reclaimed water line runs, Cliff? Okay. Well, in any case, you know, I do think that's something we should start looking at regularly for our projects here in Goleta. You know, it's on everybody's mind right now. We have excess recycled water in the city of Goleta. And if we can start trying to connect it, when possible, to every single project, even if it's a shared cost between different developments, I think that would definitely be in the interest of the city and the public. So is that something that staff would be able to get back to us on, or how would we handle that?
Asking about this specific project or any project?
I think every project should.
Well, we can. I mean, I don't know if Public Works, we can check into it. We can call, you know, we can contact the Water District and find out, or the Sanitation District. But I'm not, I mean, it'd be up to the Commission if you want to, I mean, we would hope you wouldn't want to delay this project tonight for that. I mean, we could also make it a condition that they explore that and incorporate that if possible. I don't know if
that would be appropriate. It's not within the Commission's purview to require that. The Water District could under their rules and regulations, but that's something we can definitely look at for future projects and see how those reclaimed water issues can be incorporated into projects, especially for landscape maintenance.
Great. Yeah, I just, I'm aware of the fact that with the Cabrillo Business Park, the reclaimed water line runs within a quarter mile, and we didn't actually connect to that for that project, which I think is a huge missed opportunity. And we really have to start looking into those things. This is a tiny one, we have a one-time opportunity to connect these projects to reclaimed water. So I think we need to look at that a little bit more closely. Okay. And then my second question about water is about the stormwater infiltration. And I see that there wasn't very good stormwater cleansing or stormwater elements to this project, or there aren't those there currently. So as far as what's been done here with the biofiltration and the catch basin inserts, is that currently required by state law, or is that something the city of Goleta requires, or how were these mitigations settled upon?
Yeah, so these mitigations measures, one were the catch basin inserts were proposed by the applicant. It's also, in my assumption, that's also a required Public Works Department condition of approval. If you look at the proposed kind of stormwater runoff for the site, even though the footprint of the building is 20,000 square feet, the actual impervious surface in terms of landscaping is only really kind of being reduced by 1%. In terms of stormwater, they are actually decreasing their stormwater runoff, mostly due to the improved landscaping on the western portion of the site, which will be able to act as somewhat of a kind of bioswale per se, infiltration landscaping measure that will then eventually go off into the Patterson Avenue stormwater drain. We have incorporated mitigation measures for the catch basin inserts, as well as the required landscaping. Would I answer your question?
Well, I read all that in the staff report. I was just curious how those all those mitigations were, if they're required or things that the applicant, because again, you know, when we have an existing site with very with a lot of impermeable surfacing, you know, they're not, as you said, changing the condition very much. So I do have a question for the applicant and the civil engineer, if this is the time, unless anyone else wants to. Mr. Daniels?
Let me go through a couple of my questions, and we can have the applicant come up. Thank you. Anybody else?
I have one.
Okay, go, Commissioner.
Oh, if you could, there, I didn't notice in the report any discussion of FARs on this project. And there's guidance on it, but
about the four-air ratio?
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, the four actually calls in these ordinance a lot aerial ratio. Lot coverage for the property is 40%. In terms of them meeting that lot coverage, they're currently at 24% with the proposed building.
With the proposed building, they're
correct.
24%. About 44,000 square foot on the site with
the proposed building is 20,000 square feet, and the existing is about 25,000 square feet.
So 45,000 on 145,000 square foot lot? Is that what we got?
On 3.4 acres, which is about 150,000.
Okay.
Is that it? I'd like to call up Ms. Milan, please. I've got some questions about GTIP, which we heard a lot about on last Thursday. And if you could illuminate just some of this discussion, I would like that. I think it's an easy question for you, so let's start there. I understand the GTIP funds are going to be used for the two left-hand turns onto the southbound 101, and then there's a meter also in that area on southbound 101. Okay. My question is, have these improvements been on the books for a while, and you knew that you were going to use them at some point in time? Or are they new? Is the developer, will the developers have to pay for a larger portion of it? I just need to know, you know, when the concept hit and how many other parcels, let's say, are involved in this particular improvement, these improvements.
Chair Daniels, the improvements that you're referring to currently are required of one other project that I know of, which is the Cavaletto Tree Farm that is subdividing. That's a parcel that's actually in the county, very large subdivision that has also significant impacts, and there's a fair share scenario that's conditioned on that project. That project has not moved forward yet, and one of the interim fixes to the impacts to that intersection include the restriping. The city has the GTIP project that does ultimate reconfigure of that intersection. So there's, right now there's only one project. This project will be the second one. And if there are other future projects, I'm not aware of anything at this time that it would be currently developing. I mean, there's currently the temporary parking lot adjacent to the hospital and their project. And if that remains a temporary lot and or turns into a new development, that would potentially also add to the fixes as well as the impacts. So at this point, that right now, there's just one other project that shares this restriping, if you will.
Okay, and metering?
And the metering.
And this is really the first time I've been able to drill down on some of this stuff. And so what I want to ask you is that at this point, we've got one potential parcel that may be coming in, but you've got a developer here that will probably be going forward. And would they pay 100% and then get funds back depending on what other parcels might come in and have impacts within that area?
Correct.
Is that how that works?
Correct.
Okay, I get it. So 100%, we know that. And then we're talking about, you called it the parking area, the temporary parking.
It's the temporary, it's right, approved temporary
right,
parking
understood.
Lot.
Okay. And Cavaletto. And just for curiosity, do you know how many parcels are there in Cavaletto?
Ooh.
Is it over 100?
It's definitely yeah. over 100. Something, I don't think it's 200, but I know that it's over
okay.
100. Where in there it falls, I'm off the top of my head, I don't remember.
All right, I appreciate that. Thank you. Those were my questions. Should we listen to the applicant? Right. Who will be speaking tonight?
Dana Severy and the team's here and the owner. And we're here to answer any questions that you want to direct at us. I'll just briefly take a moment to, on behalf of the entire team and the owner, thank staff for working with us in a very collaborative, responsive fashion over the last year. We started with Shine Ling, who was great, and then he had too much on his plate, and we had the pleasure of getting to work with Lisa and Daryl. And to say they haven't been great to work with would be an understatement. So it's been, I think, a very collaborative effort with your staff, and it's made, I think, the project better given their inputs. And I know Derek's worked closely with Public Works, so I think collectively, I think the inputs have made for a project that is better because of all those inputs and thoughtful perspectives that were introduced along the way. So, again, thank you, and we're here to answer any questions you guys might have.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that the commission would want, any of the specialists that you would want to take? Yes?
Okay. Yeah, I have a few questions. Thank you for the civil engineers or engineer, single or plural. Wayne, get stuck with it. All right.
Good evening.
Good evening. I'm Wayne Fitch with Benfield and Smith Engineers.
Welcome.
Okay, so I'm just curious if you could tell us a little bit about the FlowGuard series catch basin insert filters and whether or not they need to get cleaned on a regular basis in order to function correctly.
There is a certain maintenance procedure that needs to be followed with the FlowGuard. Whether it's a matter of cleaning or just replacing them, and I'm not sure the exact maintenance period. It depends on the rainfall and what we're actually getting in. Somewhere around average 6 months, typically, but it varies depending on storm events.
Okay, great. So every 6 months, more or less, to a year, these need to be cleaned. Who's going to be taking responsibility to clean them so that they don't discharge the pollutants into our creeks?
That would be up to the maintenance facility or the maintenance staff of the tenants. So,
okay, thank you. Those are all my questions.
Oh, I had one follow-up with okay. your amount about the reclaimed water system. The current reclaimed water system starts at the Goleta Sanitary District and goes out through the university, out El Colegio, up Stork Road, and out towards Sandpiper. That's the general route of the main line. UCSB does tap into it, uses quite frequently for various projects, but it doesn't head east at all.
Okay.
So there's
so
nothing
that's not gonna
coming
be possible.
Towards Patterson at that point. And then also with the fact of going up Stork Road, it veers left and heads out west from there, so it doesn't come back to Los Caneros, as you were mentioning, the Cabrillo Business Park. So it's... Yeah, it's a little complicated. It's complicated, and I know it's been brought up in the past about trying to connect it back and interlink it all, but I know we've talked to Goleta Water about it, but they want to get the projects to come up with the funding for it, which we've done analysis of $1 million plus to do this, and everyone's like, no. So, and Goleta Water District isn't willing to fork over the bill to be paying for those improvements either from last we've talked with them, but that's been a couple of years now, so.
Okay, thank you. That's exactly what I wanted to know. So it sounds like that's definitely not something that could be attached to this project, but instead a larger issue. But it sure would be great if we could get that part of Goleta hooked up to reclaimed water.
Yep.
Chair Daniels?
Yes, please.
This is probably a question for the owner. Mr. Brown, are you here?
No. TJ Gamble. I'm Senior Vice President of Samara, so I can hopefully answer. Because
thank you.
Absence.
Interesting. I did have a couple exchanges with staff today, but didn't get down to the bottom of the numbers. And I wanted to know if you have the numbers on what the total development fees will be on this project.
I have not seen those. Are you? So.
So that's the traffic or the GTIP, but the accumulation of the other mitigations from public facilities to parks to recreation to housing, any of those?
I don't know if I've seen a firm number on that, to be honest.
Okay, and staff, you haven't put anything together on that?
No, we haven't. I mean, we know what the current rates are, but the impact fees are paid at the time. Some of them are paid at building permits and some are paid at occupancy. And they're going to be paying at the rate that those fees are at the time those benchmarks happen. So we could give a number tonight, a rough number, but it probably won't have any bearing on what it really is. Well, it'll have some bearing. But
it should probably have a lot of bearing.
It probably won't be less.
There may be some variance from
that.
There'll
be variance. You're right. Better choice of words. But I wouldn't want, you know, we could throw out we have a rough number, but it is today.
Yeah.
But
I can handle it. You can give it to me.
As long as you know, it's a rough. Yeah. It's around $1 million.
Yeah, and that's
total.
Now.
And that's a rough.
And you made some. We had some exchange that the 60 peak hour trips is not the number that the GTIP fee is based on.
No, the GTIP fee is based on the 60. The improvements at the intersection, at the freeway intersection, was based on PM peak trips going through that intersection.
Understand.
And that was at 42 trips. Well, the threshold was if you added more than 15 trips to that intersection, it triggered the improvements. And they're sending 42 PM peak trips through that intersection because the other trips go off different directions.
Okay, but if the GTIP fee is 60 trips,
yes,
and it's 15,033, whatever the number is, we got $900,000 in GTIP alone. So somehow I'm not coming to $1 million with the additional development fees for public facilities, parks, rec. I don't know how the housing portion of it works down. It is just of interest, and I mean, seeing you folks going through the development,
yeah,
one of the things that, you know, I think the community should know is, what does it cost to develop a project in this community? It's something we all need to be aware of. So I would really love to see that, you know, an accurate number on it. Obviously, it's not critical for the progress of this project at this time. But I think it's valid information that should be this should track along with what we're seeing.
Commissioner Onan, would you like to have a number back next time we meet? Is that something that can happen, Lisa? Something close, approximate?
Well, yes, but like I said, I mean, it's what it is. The numbers we could give you would be the numbers today. But that's not any guarantee of what those numbers will be when they hit the certain trigger points. I mean, you guys, how much did the fees? They went up 3% this year. And they're adjusted annually, and they went up 3% this year. You know, and I think it's tied, I mean, our increase is tied to, I always get it wrong, I flip it, CPI instead of CIP. It's tied to CPI, and they're adjusted annually by the council. Mm-hmm. So it depends on how much that goes up or, you know. Up.
So the numbers you would share with us would be the minimum numbers.
Correct.
So however you would like to present them, I just think it's valuable information for the public to understand and for us as commissioners to understand.
We may want to come back at a later date and do sort of an educational on just all the fees and how it works across the board. One thing to remember is with any of these entitlements, they're good for a certain number of years. So if for some reason there is a delay in construction or there's a delay in moving forward, your entitlements are good for typically 5 years. So those fees, while it is the base fee, if we gave you a number today, as Lisa said, that they could vary anywhere. But you would definitely get an order of magnitude idea. And we could go over that for a number of different projects and magnitudes of projects and what the fees would be estimated to be at a later date.
Thank you.
Anybody else? I'm wondering if Mr. Rapp has done the traffic analysis. Did you do the traffic analysis? I have a question for you, please.
Sure.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Please state your name.
Derek Rapp, Penfield & Smith.
Good seeing you again.
Hey, you too.
There's a lot of numbers in the negative deck, and I appreciate the work you've put in. And again, this goes back to last week's GTIP discussion and their discussion and Steve Wagner's discussion regarding a 2013 model. Were you able to use that 2013 model, or is it not quite built yet?
I'd have to go back, but I do not believe it was created at the time that we did the original study. We were using the latest model at the time.
Yes. Well, and I understand it would probably come out the same, but it would have some intermodal discussions in it as well, and those would probably be more defined. So you still feel comfortable with your numbers?
Oh, yes. Yes, definitely.
Good. Good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
One more question from the applicant. Where is your where are your detractors? I mean, this is a benefit to the community, right? I don't think the city of Goleta has a benefit discussion with respect to uses, but I see it as a benefit, and I appreciate you guys coming out and putting up something that is going to help all of us one day, going through that medical and dental issues. So thank you much. Okay, it's back to the commission. Is there any discussion?
Chair Daniels, if I could ask staff one more question. Just to understand the timeline, so according to the report, the application was filed in June of 2012. So that's when it was deemed complete, or that was the original filing?
So the application was filed, actually submitted to the counter and submitted to staff at the counter. And what staff does is we review the project, do an analysis, and say, is there anything missing? We have 30 days to state if there's any incompleteness to the project. There was, I believe, two incomplete letters sent. So one letter sent that we need more information, more studies. We received those studies. And then we needed more information on those studies. So there was two incomplete letters that were sent back to the applicant to provide more information. Once we gave a complete issued a completeness of the project, which was on December 12th of 2012, then we initiated the CEQA analysis, the initial study and the MND. Throughout that period, Staff writes the MND, writes the required mitigation measures, goes out to local agencies to see if they have any required mitigation measures they want to provide for the project. And then we finalize the MND, release it for 30 days. Did that answer your question?
It does answer my question. Okay. And really what I wanted to communicate was how impressive the timeline was. Mm-hmm. And congratulations to you and Director Carmen. Seeing a project move at this pace is refreshing to see. Obviously a beneficial project, but it's nice to see that timeline shrunk down from what we've seen historically. So congratulations.
Chair Daniels?
Commissioner?
Kind of one more question for staff?
Yes.
Okay, I have a question for Public Works, if Ms. Mullen wouldn't mind. I know this is a little detail, but we are really relying on these FlowGuard series catch basin insert filters to clean all of this runoff before it gets to our creeks. So I'm just curious, if the city of Goleta, is there any sort of follow-up on whether or not these are being maintained every 6 months? And have you used them in the past? Maybe you can tell me a little bit about if you think they're successful in cleaning the water before they get to the creeks or not.
The city does not use them ourselves at this point, at least not that brand. But I know there's other projects that have, and yes, they have been successful as long as they are maintained. I believe the condition in the project states that the applicant or the developer, the owner, is required to do them. They have to have an operations and maintenance manual that we approve. But to answer your question with regards to have we started proactively checking these on that regular basis, no, we have not.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm certainly not wanting the city to babysit everyone everywhere, but I just know from my work that this is the sort of thing that does get overlooked sometimes. And we really are relying on these to clean the stormwater, and there is a potential for failure there. If they're not cleaned regularly, then when we do have a big rainstorm, all of the pollutants from the parking lot are going straight into our creeks and into the ocean, which is something we want to avoid. So I'm not sure what the answer is, but I just wanted to get your input. Thank you.
Chair Daniels and Commissioner Solomon, I did want to share, though, however, if any time the city gets any kind of complaint or even our own staff sees something out of the ordinary, say a sheen on the water or in a creek, or we see some odd discharge, we do proactively go after and make sure that those things, typically it's a kind of complaint-driven and or visual. If we see something going on, we have a number of staff out in the field with great regularity. So that is currently where we're at with regards to being able to track these down.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Milan. Any other discussion? Okay. Before I call for a motion, I'd like to ask the Commission about site visits and ex parte communications, please.
Chair, I conducted a site visit, but no ex parte communications.
Thank you.
I'll say ditto to that.
Thank you.
I did as well.
Commissioner Dresser?
No site visit, no ex parte.
I will say that I've been to that Verizon building a number of times in my work, and so I'm pretty well steeped in that particular area. So appreciate it. No ex parte, though. Thank you.
Chair Daniels, just for the record, can you open it up for public comment?
Yes, Councillor. I appreciate that. Is this B1? Agenda item B1 is opened up for public comment. At this point, I see... Excuse me? C1, it is, yeah. C1, agenda item. Open for public comment. I do not see anybody here, so I will close the public comment. Thank you, Councillor. And now, without any other discussion, I'm looking for a motion Put a motion on the table, please.
Chair, I'll make the motion. I also want to amplify what you said about the benefit of having additional medical and dental offices here in the community and our gratitude to you for putting those out there. So I will make the motion for a resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Goleta, California, adopting the final do we have to do this separately?
No.
It's together, adopting the final mitigated negative declaration and mitigation monitoring and reporting program and approving the development plan and associated modifications for the Samira Medical Office Building located at 454 South Patterson Avenue, Goleta, California, case number 12-091-DP, APN 065-090-013.
Is there a second? Thank you.
I'll second the motion.
Motion second. Any other discussion on the motion? Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Just making it hard.
Suspense.
Commissioner Dressler?
Aye.
Commissioner Onan?
Yes.
Commissioner Solomon?
Aye.
Vice Chair Daniels?
Aye.
Chair Daniels. And Commissioner West?
Aye.
Thank you. That's a unanimous vote, 5-0. And you have a project.
Thank you. Nice seeing you all.
May I ask for a 5-minute recess so we can get the next item set up, please?
Planning Commission has come to order again. It's 7:02, and we are looking at agenda item D1. Linda, could you read that for us, please?
Yes. Item D is a discussion action item. It's the general plan annual report.
Thank you. Ms. Wells, are you staff tonight?
Yes.
Thank you.
Good evening, Chair and Commissioners. Thank you for this opportunity to present to you the General Plan Annual Report for year 2013. I have a little background in the presentation, and then there's some just highlights from the 2013 annual report that's in your staff report packet. And just a reminder, the action is to pass the resolution that moves this item forward to the City Council for their consideration. The General Plan Annual Progress Reports are required under Government Code Section 65402. So that's why we do this at this time of year, because it's due to the state by April 1st. The purpose of the report is to provide a status of the general plan, so a status of the amendments, and to describe the implementation progress, and also to document the progress towards meeting our regional housing needs allocation, or RENA is the acronym that's commonly used. Also to list out the housing units that were constructed in 2013. So just jumping straight into general plan amendment status. To date, there have been 12 amendments to the general plan. There were no amendments in 2013. In 2013, one amendment was initiated for further study by the City Council. And that was for the Page site, and that's a land use designation change, and that's in Old Town over by the drive-in theater. There are four pending developer-funded amendments, and those are listed on the screen. It's the Shelby Trust, Kenwood Village, Village at Los Carneros, and Target Corporation. Most of those are land use changes, requested land use changes. There's one pending city-initiated amendment, and that's for the Old Town Park. That is for a land use designation change as well, and that's also a site that's identified in the general plan as a future park site, and we'll go over that a little bit more when we get to the open space element. The land use element is really largely driven from one implementation action, and that's for a new zoning ordinance, and to keep it updated. So while we are preparing a new zoning ordinance, we also amended the existing code five times in 2013. I won't go into those, are listed in the annual report, but just wanted to highlight that there was one amendment to the zoning map, and that was for Cabrillo Business Park, for adding in that new designation for specific plan Cabrillo Business Park, so it's SP-CBP. And like I just said, the new zoning code is under preparation, as well as the local coastal program. So those were kicked off in 2013, and we are moving forward on that project, as you know. Our open space element identifies 18 parcels in an open space overlay district, and that those parcels are connected to Elwood Mesa. They are down off of Matilda Drive. We've purchased four of them. We didn't purchase any in 2013, but we're in discussions with two landowners. So our Neighborhood Services Department is working on that. There's also a requirement for a park system master plan. That's a pretty big undertaking, and that was kicked off for the first time in 2013 with the recreation needs assessment. So that will probably be going forward in 2014, since the project was just kicked off late in 2013, but that will start the whole process for a park master plan. I mentioned the Old Town Park. That project, the design is underway. We had some workshops in 2013, and so I just wanted to flag that because it's a big implementation action in our general plan in a couple different places because it is a park, future park site. The open space element drives the requirement to prepare and implement open space management plans. So the Elwood Mesa has a plan, and a number of actions were undertaken in 2013. Our butterfly docent program is thriving, and our butterfly habitat management plan is in progress. We also have an ongoing open space maintenance program that our Public Works Department implement, so they're picking up trash and they're doing a lot of work out on Elwood to keep it clean and remove weeds when they can and things like that. And we're also working on a Elwood Mesa wildfire prevention plan, and we're tying that together with the butterfly management plan to make sure that we can meet the needs of both of those sometimes opposite purposed plans. So we're working on that, and there's an environmental impact report that will be prepared that's studying both of those projects. A lot of work is being done on Elwood Mesa. The open space plan was pretty aggressive. We're working on the trails and restoration design project. That's a partnership with the Santa Barbara Trails Council, and that's for the coastal trail and also the Juan Bautista de Anza trail, and it connects in with the university's portion of the trail. So that's in design. We're working on the environmental document, and that should be released pretty soon. We also completed a native grassland restoration project that was started when we first purchased the project, or the parcel, and did the land swap with Comstock Homes, or the Bluffs Development. So we started it way back when, and it has finally finished and looks amazing. So I wanted to highlight that, that we are not just starting things, but we're also finishing things. There's a management plan for, yes?
Just stop for a second.
Sure.
I'm looking at the native grassland area. What is that in acreage?
1.54 acres, I think.
Thank you.
There's a management plan for Lake Los Carneros, and we implemented that by partnering with the Channel Islands Restoration and the Santa Barbara Trails Council to do some cleanup, to do some weeding. So there's ongoing volunteer days out at the park, and so we're trying to keep that cleaned and maintained as well. The conservation element requires a creek and watershed management plan. We have not started that, but we have worked on implementing the annual routine maintenance plan for creek projects, and that's written by the flood control district and implemented also by the flood control district, but we guide that process. And then we also have our stormwater management plan that is continually seeming to get updated. We just submitted it to the State Regional Water Quality Control Board. We also submitted a guidance document in 2013 that addresses new state regulations, and we're getting ready to do that again because there are additional regulations that will be taking effect in 2014, so we'll have some work to do on that. So these plans don't take the place of a creek and watershed management plan, but they're serving to sort of build the foundation so that we can someday have a watershed management plan. There's also a requirement for a tree protection ordinance, and we will be preparing that ordinance as part of the zoning ordinance, and we'll be building off of some of the work that the Tree Advisory Committee has done with the urban forest management plan. There's a lot of detail in that about an ordinance. So that's serving as the foundation for the ordinance. And then we will take the tree ordinance to the Public Tree Advisory Committee for review of that particular ordinance, since that's in their purview. The conservation element also requires a greenhouse gas reduction plan, or what we call a climate action plan. And in 2012, you probably remember, we did our municipal plan for city facilities, and now we're finishing up our climate action plan that's citywide. So that will be, that's winding down, so we'll be releasing the draft climate action plan here pretty quick. We had two workshops in 2013, and it'll be nice to have that one crossed off of our list here pretty soon. So switching over to the safety element, there's one implementation action that's specific to San Jose Creek. Because the flood control project's so critical to the land uses in Old Town. So that project was prioritized, and we should be getting completion of that construction within the next year or so. So you can see the picture on the right is from this time last year, and the picture on the left is from the end of 2013. So there's been a lot of progress, and it's also a fish passage project, so we're getting dual benefits. The safety element requires annual oil and gas audits because of the Elwood Onshore facility is located within the city. So we conduct annual audits. There are 54 findings, and 24 findings were remedied by the end of the year. And there's still 30 that are minor, and the fixes are in progress. So when I say minor, I mean things like a lid not all the way down on a container or a trash container, or paperwork missing a signature or something like that. So they're really, really minor, very detailed audits. So this is in line with what we have seen in previous years, but we keep our building officials on this. So we're constantly checking with the operator with these fixes. The safety element also requires a multi-hazard emergency response. Yes? That's a good question. I will try to explain. We use that committee at the county to vet the audit findings because these facilities are all connected. Platform Holly comes on shore, goes through the Elwood Onshore facility, and then proceeds up the coast through the county. So we sit, we join with the SSRRC is the acronym, to vet these issues. But we don't actually have a seat at the table. It's a county committee, so we don't actually have a seat at the table, but it's not used for, they don't actually conduct the audit. So I hope that can kind of answer
your question. Who actually conducts the audit?
The group conducts the audit, so we have an inspector, then we conduct the audit, then I attend, and then we have a electrical engineer that attends, fire department, APCD, so it's a group of people that go through the facility. And then someone from the county usually attends as well because they want to watch and see what's happening at the Elwood Onshore facility, as it is so interconnected with all of their facilities.
Thank you.
So there's a requirement for a multi-hazard emergency response plan, and we did that in 2012. So that action is met, and we are implementing that plan. We did some training for staff in 2013 on the plan, and then we're also preparing an emergency response action plan that's more specific to the city. So that's underway. The transportation element is extensive in the list of transportation improvements that are planned for the city. And the implementation action 2 requires a capital improvement program and budget be passed annually. So we've been doing that every year. So despite the fact that our budget is a 2-year cycle, we still approve our CIP and budget every single year. And right now we have 77 total projects at $230 million, 34 of which are active at $114 million. Not all of those are transportation projects, but most of the high-priced ones are. The picture up here is the Los Carneros and Hollister intersection improvements that were completed in 2013. Also in our transportation element is a requirement for a neighborhood traffic management. And we have, and it kind of detailed, the implementation action details out things about neighborhood watch programs, et cetera. We have 17 neighborhood watch programs. And right now we're seeking to improve that program by using different interfaces like Facebook. So 2014 will reflect that work that is being done with the Neighborhood Services and Public Safety Department, and also with our Public Information Officer. We also have a school zone traffic enforcement program that is really popular and effective. So I'm going to switch now to the housing element, which has, I think, 54 implementation programs or actions, which is what we call them in the housing element. And I'm not going to go through them or even list out the implementation program titles. I'm just going to, I kind of grouped them so I could give you more context of what we're trying to accomplish in our housing element. So first, let's talk about the housing unit production summary in 2013. We produced, meaning we had occupancy granted to 22 units, and they were all at the Bluffs. And so single family, residential, and market price ownership units. But I thought to give you kind of a heads up as to what we're seeing in the future, we have 467 units that are under construction. Those are at Haskell, and under construction meaning we've got, you know, bulldozers are at the site, so there's activity happening. Haskell's Landing, which is the Hideaway Bungalows, West Star, Hollister Village, Willow Springs 2. Oh, I just jumped up to this one. So I gave myself away. We have more than 936 units in the permit process. That's a lot of units, so I'm going to just list out the big ones. Village at Los Carneros, that's also in our affordable housing overlay. The Cortona site, also in our affordable housing overlay. So they're comprising two of the large sites of our pending projects that are called for in our general plan. And then there's the Shelby site and the Kenwood site, and those are attached to general plan amendments. So I'm not going to go into detail because at some point these projects will be before you to make decisions. So they still have a little bit to go, but that's a lot of units in the pipeline. Oh, and then there's the Page site. So that also is a general plan amendment with 175 units. So now into the more complicated stuff, the regional housing needs allocation. So the way the government code is breaks out housing cycles. And right now we're at the end of the 2007 to 2014 housing cycle. And we had to plan for a regional housing need allocation that was handed to us by Santa Barbara County Association of Governments and the State Housing and Community Development Department. And that capacity, we were required to show that we had suitable sites for 1,641 units, which we did through the vacant sites on the Hollister Avenue affordable housing overlay that is shown on the map on your screen. So now we're entering into a new planning cycle, and we are preparing a new housing element to meet a new allocation. And that is for an 8-year period, so it's 2014 to 2022. And our requirement is a lot reduced compared to the last one, which is, and so we have to show capacity for 974 units. So a lot less. But as you can see before, we have a lot of housing that are under production and soon to be before you for decision making. So we're working with our consultant to put together a housing element and do a completely new inventory and everything starting over again. Was there a question?
Ms. Wells, just so for my clear understanding, does the 1641 then go away and get replaced by the 974, or are they additive?
Well, we're assuming that it's not additive. Because our housing element was not certified, we have to prove certain points in our housing element submittal to the state, but we feel that it is not additive.
Thank you.
But that is still an argument to be had if necessary, but we're holding firm that it is not additive.
Would you like to go?
Do you have a question?
Yeah, please.
Okay.
Please.
Yeah, obviously you've stirred up some questions here. So in our presentation from Mr. Wagner in the Public Works Department, we talked about the general plan being built out at 2020. More or less? Was that the year?
2030.
Thank you. So do these regional housing needs allocations continue past 2030, potentially?
Well, the way that the state handles this are through cycles. So we have this next cycle that goes through 2022, and then there'll be another cycle, 8-year cycle after that, that will go to 2030.
And if they're not additive, then it's essentially a moving target during each one of those cycles.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
And it is expected that the state will continue to issue RENA allocations past the 2030 mark. So this will be something that we'll be facing for years to come.
I see. And then if they do issue it past 2030, then we're basically looking at potentially improving housing on existing lots or renovations?
Existing lots, renovations, second units, and other infill property redevelopment, not necessarily with any redevelopment funds, but redevelopment. So it'll be interesting to see how the changes happen with our housing as time moves on.
Thank you.
I'm going to go. Ms. Wells, real quick, was there any discussion on the reason for what I see is about a 700 unit drop in the RENA number?
Yes. So it takes about, I don't know, a year and a half, maybe 2 years to work through the whole regional housing need allocation. And we start with refined census data. So we just had a census count in 2010, so we're able to use that information with the state in order to look at our growth and to update the existing numbers. And it turned out that we were lower in population than had previously been assumed. And so we didn't have the same kind of migration. In migration, we didn't have the same birth rates that was projected. That was also lower. So because our population growth was a little bit less, I'm simplifying the equation, but that was a large driver behind a reduced demand for housing. So the state handed the county, SBCAG, a lower number than what would have otherwise been handed down to the county, and which then we all got lower numbers as a result.
If you've got the numbers off the top of your head, could you share them? People per household before 2010 and after 2010.
Our people per household is a lot lower than the rest of the county. And I don't want to say off the top of my head because I'll say it wrong. It's 2 point something, but it's lower.
But there was a decrease in that.
There was a decrease. Yes, there was a decrease. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's a big factor.
Sir. Chair, could I ask a question? Manager Wells, at the end of 2013, how many housing units were there in the city of Goleta? And then also, if you can speak to, within the general plan, how many housing units are potential in the current land use designations within the general plan?
Okay, now you're having me go from memory, so I could be off. There's
yes,
somewhere
general.
In the somewhere between 12,000 and 13,000 housing units in the city, if I'm remembering correctly. And our land inventory for vacant residentially zoned sites, so not looking at upzoning or land conversions, was in the ballpark of the previous RENA, a little bit more, so a little more than 1,600 units for our vacant land inventory.
I'm trying to recall that number too, but we were discussing the other night at the meeting that we were discussing some 3,000 numbers, remember?
Our 2020.
To 20.
And we were saying that we were about halfway there.
Right, so, but they would have been, wouldn't have that been called out in the land use of the general plan?
That's right. So we're planning for this cycle that ends in 2014. And if you remember, the cycle before that was 2,388 units. I can't believe I remember
right.
that.
Mm.
And then it's a pretty big number. So that was a driver in some of the land use designation changes when we adopted our general plan. And then we were handed a lower regional housing need allocation, but yet still had that land inventory. And it is around 3,000 units, so we are about halfway there as far as accounting for it in the housing element. That doesn't mean that there aren't more sites. It just means what we're using in our math in our housing element to demonstrate that we meet the capacity.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, Commissioner.
Thank you. Hypothetical question. If we were at build out and we didn't have any buildable land, and would the state hand us a RENA requirement regardless, and then would we be required to, say for example, replace existing housing stock with infill?
They would hand us a housing allocation, and they do. There are some communities that are built out. Carpentry is an example. And they're basically just densifying, adding it more. They have to count their second unit, so it's just trickier. But the number that they allocate is much, much lower than for cities that have vacant land.
And the thing to remember with HCD is you have to demonstrate capacity. You don't necessarily have to produce the units.
Right.
They would like you to produce the units, but in the future when we don't have any more land to build on, we could demonstrate it via. You know, what if every single person in the city had a second unit, boom, there's maybe the number that we would have at that point. But it's usually a mix of different housing types. It's different opportunities that we may see in the city. But we have to be able to demonstrate that to HCD.
Well, you kind of anticipated my next question, which is that if we go forward with a change in the zoning code that allows garage conversions, second units, you know, whatever, in a more, I don't know, sort of a more liberal way than we currently do, that would take us closer to that number.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Ms. Wells?
Oh, I thought you had another question.
Got you sleeping.
Okay, switching over to funding. Without the redevelopment agency funds, we've really been kind of gutted. And so we're doing some creative juggling. We're using our community development block grant funds, and we brought in $8,500 this year. And we allocated general fund dollars, $13,500, mostly to homeless and transition support services for the homeless. And that's really the where we've been focusing our attention. We are also collecting our affordable housing fund when we collect either payments from housing projects or from industrial commercial projects. So we increased the fund in 2013 because of the Marriott project with $273,000. So our fund is growing, and we have almost $1.3 million in that. So we have something now that we can start using to leverage to get a better product or to generate more lower income units or whatever it is at the time that we have an opportunity. So our neighborhood services department is really working to both leverage funds to get more funds available to the public, and we'll ultimately be looking at opportunities to spend that $1.3 million.
Ms. Wells, mm-hmm. I do have a question. Can you talk about what, in general, the in-lieu fee is per house or per unit?
And we don't have a fee, so we have a payment, but it's, I think if you do the math and you look at that by the number of units that were expected and you do the math, it's somewhere mm-hmm. in $80,000 range, but that's not something that we're, we don't have a fee that specifies $80,000.
I understand. Payment. And the payment is related to the city council's findings and adoptions, and you know, this is the payment.
Correct.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So we don't always need to have money to do things because there are a lot of support services in the county. So the Neighborhood Services Department is very proactive in reaching out. They're working on support for rental assistance programs with the Housing Authority of Santa Barbara County. And this year they served 302 families with Section H vouchers for to assist with payments for on rental properties. That was an increase of 66 families from 2012. And also support for seniors. 200 seniors benefited from adult daycare programs and then also the senior nutrition program. And then I didn't list out all of the other things that the Neighborhood Services Department does, but you can see from this list up on the screen that they partner, as does the Planning Department and even the Public Works Department, when it comes to development projects, to get the most out of each project for our special needs population, to get a better product, to get services through, for example, the Rental Housing Mediation Task Force. And we attend lots of committees where we collaborate with our neighbors to share resources, to share information, to share flyers. So this is a long list of providers. And we do get a lot of success out of partnering. So despite not having the redevelopment agency money, not that we don't need it because we do, but we do get a lot of services to our community through these partnerships. So I'm going to conclude the presentation with just listing out some of the highlights from 2013. There were no general plan amendments. The zoning ordinance project is underway, as is the housing element update. And we have our new regional housing needs allocation, and it's a lot smaller. So I think that is also a helpful takeaway from this presentation. The recreation needs assessment is underway, and that was a big undertaking. And our Old Town Park design is in progress. And we have 34 active transportation improvement projects worth $114 million. Really? That's a lot. In our small city, we are really moving with our transportation projects. And with that, I conclude the presentation. with the recommendation to adopt the resolution that's in your staff report.
Ms. Welsh, thank you. That's a lot of information for us, but for you to have to handle. So I appreciate you being here and doing that for us. Also, I apologize for the interruptions, but I think it made it this flow quicker. I do have a question, though. It's about butterflies. And we've had this discussion before, you and I, here, with respect to who's working on what with respect to Elwood. And you mentioned to me that there were quite a few UCSB people, one way or another, are integrated in what they're doing. When I saw this butterfly habitat management plan, I was wondering if there were any professors associated with UCSB that were part of that.
There are no professors at UCSB studying butterflies, but we are partnering with Cal Poly professors, so they do have entomologists there that are assisting us with the butterfly management plan
and, maybe
and the docent program. We've had a lot of technical support, and the students at UCSB have really come out in the workshops. So they've the student scientists have played a role in the management plan because it's something that they want to learn.
Good.
Yeah.
So was this the first time you've reached out to San Luis Obispo?
No. Since we've incorporated, San Luis Obispo has been actively reaching out to us as well because the butterfly grove on Elwood is so critical to the western monarch butterfly population. So they've been very interested in what we're doing. They've provided a lot of information to us. They've come down here and trained people in how to do counts.
Sure.
So.
Well, they've got one at Pismo.
Yes, yeah, they do.
Right on the highway. Okay. Good. Well, thank you for that. Any other questions, please?
Yes, Chair, if I might. On the open space element, you referred to the recreation needs assessment. The type is really small in there. Has it already been completed?
Oh, no, it has not. It was just kicked off in, I think, October of 2013, so it really hasn't hit the streets yet.
That sounds like something that would be really interesting. Would that be made available to the public through our website?
Yes, and you know, this item has been going to the Parks and Recreation Committee Commission that started at the end of 2012. So if you get online and you look at the Park and Recreation Committee agendas, there almost everyone has some kind of update on the, well, everyone since October, every one of their meetings has something about the recreation needs assessment.
I had just one other comment, and that has to do with the transportation element on page 9. You had mentioned that Facebook was being used to enhance the program, and I wanted to, ask if Nextdoor.com was also being used in Western Goleta, where I live. Nextdoor.com seems to be really becoming embraced, and people are really paying attention to it, so I wonder if that might be a place for this as well.
I will pass that on to Valerie Kushnerov, our PIO. I'm not sure if Nextdoor is being used. They haven't launched Facebook yet. They're just exploring it. Mm. And they probably will, but it didn't occur in 2013.
Yeah.
And Nextdoor has been very heavily used by our public information and division, so I would expect that they would utilize that as a base as well.
Well, one of the nice things about it is that it doesn't raise a lot of the privacy issues that Facebook does, and a lot of people just sort of are allergic to Facebook, whereas Nextdoor.com is, much more neutral and specific. Thank you so much, Ms. Wells. It's hard, for people to fathom how much work you do and then to do this annual report as well on top of all the projects that you're moving forward to have to create this and look back over the last year is really, you just do a tremendous amount of work and all of it with such excellence. So I just want to acknowledge that and thank you.
Thank you. That's really nice. Thank you. It's my pleasure.
I have another question. Does anybody else?
I do as well.
Eric, please.
Can you speak anything to the coastal land use plan and where what we're seeing with that, what we when we will see something with that?
Yes. So the city council initiated that by authorizing us to move forward with getting a grant. And we did get the grant for $125,000. And we're in the back and forth with the contract negotiations with the scope of work with the state. So that hasn't, the actual detailed work hasn't started yet, but we'll tie it into the overall zoning ordinance project. So that's the plan. So you haven't really heard about it yet because we haven't finalized that, the grant terms.
Now, is as I recall, we couldn't get an approved coastal land use plan without an approved housing element. Is that still in
zoning ordinance? We have to package the general plan with a zoning ordinance that meets the standards of the Coastal Act. And then we bring that to the Coastal Commission, and that's how we get our LCP or our local coastal program.
So there's not a connection to the housing element being approved by the HCD?
Correct.
Okay.
Commissioner.
Mark, a question. I was curious with the conservation element, the greenhouse gas reduction elements, the two you have listed here, the second is the CAP, citywide climate action. Is that the same as the state bill that we talked about to reduce emissions by 2020, or is that a separate thing that was initiated independently?
Those are connected. So okay. It is addressing the targets that are established in AB 32.
Okay, yeah. Good. Thank you.
I've got one last question. Conservation element, tree protection ordinance. You talk about the urban forest management plan and public tree advisory committee. My question is, what trees are we talking about? Is it park trees? Is it median trees, you know, through the traffic? Where is it and where isn't it? I'm trying to get between public and private.
There. It's all public trees.
It's all public
yes.
trees.
Yes.
Okay. So and so this doesn't have anything to do with private parks.
I should clarify. The urban forest management plan is for public trees. The tree protection ordinance hasn't been developed yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Very good. Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any discussion with the commission here itself? I'm seeing no one. Would somebody like to put forth a motion that talks about adopting this for
I'll move
D1.
I'll move that the Planning Commission adopt a resolution to approve the General Plan Coastal Land Use Plan 2013 Progress Report for submittal to the Governor's Office of Planning and Research and California Department of Housing and Community Development.
And I'll second.
Thank you, Commissioners. All in favor, say aye.
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 No? I didn't hear one. It sounds like it was unanimous, 5-0. Again, thank you. thank you. It's big. You know how big it is. So, you know, we don't have to tell you, but we're just impressed. So, thank you for your assistance on this. Director's report.
Okay.
Do you have anything?
Just a couple things. In front of you tonight on the dais are the EIR for the Cortona apartment project and the GPA addendum for Village at Los Carneros. Just a little bit of reading material for you to take home. We will be following up with you with the draft module 1 for the zoning ordinance that should be coming to you hopefully in the next week or two in advance of the March 10th meeting that you have to discuss this item. This is not the whole ordinance. It's just a little tiny part of it. It's the administration section. And then we will also be reaching out to you via email regarding special meetings. As you all know, we canceled April 14th. And we're going to need some more of your time. We have so many things moving, both long range and current planning projects, that we'll be looking at either April 7th or April 21st. So look for an email from Wendy in the next week, and she'll be looking for availability to see if we can get a quorum. So, and that's really all I have for this evening.
Thank you, Director. Any comments from Planning Commission at this point?
I just wanted to make a quick comment as the outgoing chair that I think this is the right Planning Commission for our upcoming zoning challenges and discussions. So I really welcome the expertise of Chair Daniels and really hope that he helps to keep us on track, since he does understand these things. And it has been his profession that I'm just going to ask for his help on keeping the discussion here moving in the right direction, because I know it'll be easy to get sidetracked by details that may not be as important as the things we should really be focusing on, because there's way more than we can ever discuss. So I'm very happy that Chair Daniels is here to help with that. And I just want to say that it's really been a pleasure to serve as chair here. It's been a year of a lot of changes at the city of Goleta. I was just thinking back to when I started, and we had an interim planning director, and Johnny Wallace was still with us. Mm-hmm. So I just like to note what a great mentor she was for me, even though I didn't know her personally. Just being here in the Planning Commission and seeing her act as chair was really an experience that I'm glad that I had.
Meg, thank you so much for those kind words. And I think I didn't have to reflect on this last year, too, with you at the helm and getting through a lot of sticky places when there were some. But you held up well, and you could have been here for the zoning ordinance. So I'm going to second thought that in any event. No, I appreciate you being here for the last year, and it was all good. Okay, thank you. We have anything else? Motion to adjourn?
We'll make a motion to adjourn.
Very good. Second?
Second.
Vote?
Yay. Aye.
Thank you. Good night.